What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Davidson Hang podcast, where I get to interview amazing people and help share their wisdom with the world. Let me know your takeaways and feel free to connect with the guests. I'm aiming to build a community around coaching, self-development, leadership, where people are not afraid to be their most authentic versions of themselves. You can find us on video by searching the Davidson Hang podcast on YouTube. Welcome and enjoy the ride. Hey, what's going on, everyone? I'm excited to bring to you Leah Smart, who runs L&D. She's an L&D partner at LinkedIn, and she's also the host of In The Arena podcast, which is a LinkedIn-sponsored podcast. And yeah, I think you're just a fascinating person, and yeah, you're practically famous now. I saw that Ariana Huffington like did your post, right? I was like, whoa, like that's like the big leagues.
You know what? I went on LinkedIn that morning. Something told me to go on and I thought it broke. I was like, is this some kind of April Fool's Day trick? Where on your Ariana Huffington actually post my writing.
Do you have like a good relationship with her?
No, I've never met her, never interacted. This was like, she didn't even tag me in it. Like I literally had this instinct to log on to LinkedIn and I saw that. I was like, what is going on here? So yeah.
I feel like that's the cool thing about LinkedIn. Like you never know, right? Because I mean, I feel like I always forget like the reach that LinkedIn has. And then when things like that happen, you're like, well, okay, I get it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a whole backstory behind that I can tell you about later. That's like more woo woo, but yeah, kind of strange that happened.
I like the woo woo. I feel like the cool thing with you, Jackie, and it's pronounced Stefan, right? Or Stefan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys marry like, and Stefan, you guys all marry, like you have a good balance of the woo woo, but then also the practicality and like the business sense. Right. I feel like, I mean, I can only speak for, you know, some of the folks in accomplishment coaching and, you know, like sometimes coaches go on the side of like, you know, and then you're kind of like, all right, you know, but I feel like you guys both have like a pretty good balance of like getting shit done and you know, laws of attraction and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was a difficult process to figure out what the right balance was, especially in the corporate environment. So Jackie and I, who co-host the podcast with me, spent time just saying like, you know, I was saying to her, I remember like, can I talk about spirituality on this podcast? Like, can I say the word, like the trigger word spirituality and not pretend it's just mindfulness, but it's really, I agree. I think there's, I mean, I certainly consider myself to be, someone who practices spirituality constantly, but I'm also someone who's greatly benefited from consciousness and like working with the brain and the mind. But I like studying ancient spiritualities and, finding ways to connect with, you know, God, the creator, light, whatever you want to call it, your higher self. But I also recognize that we all kind of need to be brought along in that process and find what works for us.
Yeah, I feel like I was always like behind on the spirituality game. Like I felt like I was always good about the self and the others, but when it came to the universe or whatever you want to call it, like that was always what was like lacking for me. And I think sometimes I still have that where,
yeah,
that's the one area where I could tap into more often. So it's, yeah it's
been, I saw it as like, when I started doing it, I'm calling it modern spirituality now in the last like 5 minutes since you and I started talking about what I'm doing. But, I realized it's sort of like how, I feel like when I was a kid, people used to talk about magic. It was like, if you don't believe in magic, you won't see it. It's sort of the same thing. It's like I noticed for myself in my journey, like I missed a lot of the opportunities to see the magic of the universe or the magic of, you know, the creator or the source, people call it many things. But when you don't open your eyes to it, you kind of miss it. And then you find yourself, or I found myself believing maybe it wasn't there. But as I opened my eyes to it, I started to see it everywhere.
That's awesome. So I'm sure, what kind of, like, what are some of your favorite books that you would recommend in that realm?
Yeah. One of the most recent, I'll tell you about a most recent book. There's one called The Sacred Enneagram. And I don't know if you've taken the Enneagram, Davidson, but I highly suggest it. What number are you?
I'm definitely a 2 and 3 wing.
Amazing. Okay. I'm a 7. And so you're the helper. I am the enthusiast. I could totally see you being the helper. You're not supposed to even type your friends or anyone you know, but I can peg a helper in like 2 seconds. So my argument with Jackie is that she thinks she's a 2 and I think she's a 1.
What's the 1 again? Is that the individualist? Which one's 1 again?
It's the reformer.
Ah, reformer. Huh.
I think it's the reformer. Or is it the perfectionist? I always go back. I always forget that. But essentially the one is characterized by people who think that there is a right or a perfect way to do things. They tend to be people who want fairness. They follow the rules.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. Right. So help me prove it to her. I'm like, you need to retake this test with adult supervision from me. But the book is called The Sacred Enneagram, and it's about essentially the way that the Enneagram is talked about today. Is it's a very psychological conversation where, you know, it's sort of like the Myers-Briggs, and you say, oh, well, I'm an ENFP, I'm a type 7 or type 2, and then you stop there. This book is about how, we find the way home, as he puts it, through spiritual practice by accessing what our Enneagram type needs. So that's a recent one that I loved. It's spirituality. So it's not about a religion. It's about a path to your higher self and to the universe. And then another that I love, I study Kabbalah. I studied it for about 9-10 months now. And it's called The Power of Kabbalah. So pretty straightforward. But it's been a really incredible journey to learn about, again, just another path to your higher self, to higher consciousness.
For those of people who aren't as familiar with Kabbalah, how would you describe it?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I have a lot of Jewish friends, and so it's funny now because I'm like lighting the Shabbat candles and talking about the new moon, and they're like, "What are you talking about?" So we laugh about it because I've gotten really deep into this, but. Essentially, Kabbalah is an ancient tradition. It fell into Judaism. It used to only be studied by people who had gone deep into rabbinical studies and were over 40. I think they had to also be men. It was taught in very small groups. And then earlier in the 1900s, it was essentially brought into a public space where some of the Kabbalists decided, and it's called Lurian Kabbalah is the type that I'm studying, which is after Isaac Luria, who started to publicize Kabbalah. But this was many, many years ago, centuries ago that he publicized it. But recently, people have brought Lurian Kabbalah into more public spaces. And so they opened Kabbalah centers around the country. And that was Rav Berg and Karen Berg who decided to do this. So they kind of spearheaded this process of opening these centers and helping people, anyone who wanted to study Kabbalah, actually to study it. So they made it more public. They got a lot of flack for it. But they also have, I can tell you from my own experience, helped people change their lives. It's been an incredible thing. And it's essentially a way to live that is based on spiritual principles and not necessarily based on, again, religion, which for me and my belief when I say modern spirituality is I believe that those of us who fall in the millennial generation, we need something different than we grew up with. Like I grew up Christian and then I left it. So I was like, I don't get this stuff. Like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if there's a God or there isn't one. And I'm just curious. I want to know what the world has to offer. I don't want to have to be stuck in one thing, which is such a stepping thing to say, I want freedom, but it's a very real thing. And I've seen it with a lot of my close friends is just feeling like we may be trapped by what we grew up with and we may want to find something new. So my kind of motto is, explore everything, sign up for nothing. So that's been my path with Kabbalah as I am exploring it. And maybe I'll explore it until, I don't know, till my life is over and it'll just be my exploration.
That's so fascinating. Yeah, I think like when I was younger, I used to think like Jack Kornfield and like Ram Dass and them were like kind of like out there. But now I'm like, oh my God, everything they say is like gold. It's like, it definitely resonates more with me. And I feel like the older I get, the more it resonates with me. A lot of the, like even like Wayne Dyer is like a really good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think people even who are looking for something more entry level than having to go straight into spirituality is, I read a great book. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Ikigai.
Oh yeah.
So Ikigai is the Japanese word for purpose or reason for living or meaning. And so, it's a beautiful book that's about, it centers around the fact that a lot of people in what they call the blue zone in Okinawa live past the age of 100, and we're trying to figure out why. So these zones exist around the world, and one of the things they found was that people in Japan, this sector, centered their lives around their ikigai. So it was my purpose and my reason for being. So that's a little more of an entry level into spirituality that I think feels really practical and you can grasp.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of us, especially in corporate America, like we tend to follow what the world will pay us for, right? Our talents. And then so a lot of like more practicality aspect, but then the loving what you do part, I feel like is what's missing in America a lot of times. I think it's, you know, people sacrifice it like, well, I have a family, or oh, I want to buy a second house or whatever it is. But I guess for me, like, I definitely noticed that even a lot of my like, really wealthy friends, like, don't seem to, like, they don't always, half of them do, but the other half, like, don't really enjoy what they do.
Yeah, and it's, I know points in my life where I've definitely made a lot more money and been a lot less happy. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely subscribe to the, you know, we kind of set up this rule and this structure that you go to college or you graduate high school and you go straight into a job. And, you know, that job's going to carry you until you're 65 and you retire. And, you know, whether you know, our parents were children of people who went through the Great Depression, many of them who are in America. So like the idea of being loyal and sticking to a job and working your way up and like kind of not complaining was one that was very real. So, I see remnants of us. We are probably a little more rebellious, right, as a millennial generation, and saying like, no, we want purpose, we want meaning. And there's some real beauty in that. But I do think, you know, at times you're optimizing for one thing over another. So, you know, I think as long as you're consciously optimizing and you're saying like, I'm optimizing for money right now, and I may not love what I do, but I need to optimize for money for my family. I think that's okay for a period if it's a must. But the goal, obviously, is always, you know, optimizing for your own joy and general contentment.
Yeah, it seems like you're very conscious as to like who you're being in the world and what you're putting out there in the world, right? It's sort of like you get what you give, right? Mentality.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have not been that way always. So I think, thank you for saying that. I think I am, and I think I'm imperfect too. But you know, my goal has been, and my belief has been, that I can manifest and create the life that I want if and when I know my purpose, right? And I know my meaning. And you know, when I was working at LinkedIn in my early 20s and mid 20s and even late 20s, I didn't know. I didn't know the meaning or the purpose that I wanted to commit to and follow. I didn't feel anything deeply enough to go on that path. And so I found I was kind of just lost. And that was hard because I was supposed to be happy, right? Like everyone says, oh my gosh, you work in tech, you work at the best company. And I love LinkedIn. Like I don't want to go anywhere. But you know, at the same time, gosh, why am I not happy? I couldn't figure that out. And happiness is an interesting thing too. I don't think it's actually a real thing. I think we're looking for contentment and joy versus the spikes of happy and unhappy, because our emotions do that all the time. But the general feeling for me was like, I'm not feeling that nice contentment of like saying, you know, life is good and I'm full. So I spent a lot of time figuring out what was going on for me. And then to be honest with you, I feel like I really, once I got clear on how I wanted to change myself and then change the world, it was when things just started falling into place.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah, I think a lot of people sometimes do that later in life. So that's good that you did it relatively, or you know, early in your career, right? I mean, you're still young, so.
Yeah. Well, I was forced into it, Davidson. So it wasn't a choice. I was so unhappy. I hated my job. I hated where I lived. I mean, I had so much hate, and like it's so different than how I am as a person, like at my core. But I wasn't in touch with myself enough to understand what was going on, and it was really like, you know, lost. Not hate, it was lost. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you hadn't have gone through that process, you wouldn't be where you are today, right? So in a way, like, there, you know, you can't really change it. It's more like just respecting that you went through this process.
Yeah. Well, my one of my favorite spiritual teachers is Marianne Williamson, and she, if you're familiar with her, she wrote a book called A Return to Love, but she also ran for president. She used to always say when I would go see her, you know, people either learn through joy or pain. And I don't know anyone who's learned through joy. And so, you know, I used to say, oh my gosh, that year was the hardest or worst year of my life, but it was actually the biggest growth year and the most transformative. It was the foundation for transformation. So, you know, it is totally darkest before the dawn, but you know, you get the dawn. Like that's kind of the beauty of it.
Yeah. She's awesome. I met her at the Assemblage. I don't know. Have you been there?
Oh, cool. I've heard of it. I haven't. My friend is trying to get me to sign up, and I'm just signed up for too much. But what have you done there?
It's a pretty cool space. You would love it. It's like you go in. I remember like the sound baths. I remember and I got to play with that, and that was cool. They have a lot of spiritual teachers that will go there. It's pretty interesting space. It's hard to describe, but you know, you'll meet like Reiki healers, and you'll meet, you know, yeah, just really interesting people. It's like the community of like spirituality there. But it's
so cool.
It's a beautiful space too. Like there's everything is like Ayurvedic, like all the food they serve is Ayurvedic, and the elixirs and stuff. Like, yeah, it's pretty neat. I'll take, you know, we should go there one day. I mean, when this all,
You will meet there in like 2021. Totally.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're very conscious with, you know, what you're putting out there. And, you know, right now it seems like America has finally woken up to like, oh snap. Like this has been messed up. Like we've been treating people like dirt, like all this time, you know. It seems like the collective identity of America, it's like shattered right now. It's kind of like, oh wow, like I had no idea this was like going on, or at least most people. Obviously some people, you know, but I guess like, what are your thoughts on, I mean, that's a pretty loaded question, but
what are my thoughts on race or on social unrest? I mean, it's a big question. I am by no means an expert in, you know, what people are calling DEI I'm not an expert in politics or political history, but I'm certainly an expert in my own story. So, I mean, I think we were actually just earlier today recording an episode of our podcast, and we were talking about the fact that 2020 truly is a year of forced release, surrender, release of what we thought the world was. And I'm hoping it means that we can rebuild something different. So, you know, things break because they aren't working. And this isn't working for us. It's not the way our consciousness is directed anymore. And we want a world, I think all of us, you see this like collective, amazing uprise that I honestly thought I wouldn't ever see in my lifetime. And so to see that and go, wow, we want something new is pretty awesome. And so I hope that this breaking will mean that we put something back together that works for more people, and that we can actually see that all of the things that we've done to make some people better than others and build our own, you know, kind of system to oppress some and others, where others are wildly wealthy, is both powerful. I support capitalism, but it doesn't need to be such that people are denied great educations, denied the rights of humanity, that women are denied their own rights that they deserve, that LGBTQA communities are not, like, we all deserve that. Specifically now, you know, the unrest on racial injustice and the black anti-blackness in this country has been here for so long. And I remember, you know, taking classes in high school and college on African American history. Everybody in that class was black. And the problem with that is that means it was then kind of like cordoned off and said that, oh, black history is for you, not for me, if I'm not, you know, if I'm not black. So that means all of the other people who we actually need to be allies and to understand, it's not black history, it's American history. And if you're living in this country and you're part of America and part of this, this country is an incredible place, then you've got to know what history looks like, you know? So, you know, for myself, just digging into, you know, when I was younger, also digging into the history of the Japanese in this country, concentration camps, and, you know, all of the things, World War II history, even outside of this country, I'm inspired by those things. I think that, you know, for me, the experience of being black in America has been an interesting one that I started to really unpack the last probably month and a half, like really unpack. It's layered, it's complex. We all have different experiences of it. But what I appreciate is, you know, my dad and I had a really great, I still have a great relationship. And he's always been someone who I think kind of transcends that, right? And so, my hope is that every single one of us, no matter who we are, no matter what body we're in, and how we may experience the societal rules that are set up that could hurt us, that we look at our bodies and our experiences as a vehicle and not a container. So, you know, what is the vehicle that I'm in? Why did I come here for? And this comes back to maybe more Kabbalistic and Buddhist spirituality, but why am I here in this form? And what does it mean for the way that I can deliver my own unique message or gift to the world? So that's something my dad really instilled. That was a mouthful. You asked a big question, though.
And yeah, it sounds like, what do you mean by your dad transcends? I guess I'm curious about what you meant by that.
Well, I think it's, so we talk a lot about the unlearning, right? So for this country, it's unlearning around anti-blackness. Many people, whether they're white, Asian, Middle Eastern, whatever, the country is set up such that there's white supremacy and then there's anti-blackness. And the idea is that there's this spectrum, right? And so if you're, you know, the closer you get to white supremacy culture, the more you have to deny blackness, the more anti-black you may become. Mm-hmm. Because that's the way, you know, that's everyone's trying to claw their way either socioeconomically or culturally into that space. And because the power structures have been set up so that we have to, right? Like, I finished White Fragility, and it's like the system is set up this way. So my point about transcending is, you know, if there are white people today who are realizing that racism isn't a binary thing, it's not a yes or no, it's that, you know, as Robin DiAngelo puts it in White Fragility, if you're white, you are racist. It's impossible for you not to be. It's just the continuum of where you are on the spectrum. If they all have that mentality, then what's the mentality for all of us? For someone like you, I don't even know, what's your ethnic background?
I'm Vietnamese.
Vietnamese, okay. So as a Vietnamese man, as a black woman, what are our mentalities that we need to unpack? And so when I talk about transcending, if they've got mentalities, so do we. And we have our own stuff and our own work to do as well around how, you know, we play into this narrative. So I think, you know, I'm talking about the transcendence from a perspective of how might you decide you're not going to sign up for the societal rules that have been put in place.
I see. Yeah. I actually just finished White Fragility as well. And I
think, oh, cool.
It's such a great book. Actually probably one of the best books I've ever read in my life, I think. Mm. Just because, I think she like communicates it so well. And I think it's just, yeah, I think acceptance is like always like the first key to anything, right? So you have to like see where we're at and accept the status quo before we can actually change anything. Right. So I think people are starting to see wow, where have I, you know, where were times where I kind of played into that narrative, you know, even for me, honestly, prior to these last few months, like, honestly, like, I was just caring about my Asian brothers and sisters, right? Like, I honestly, like, just to be, didn't really care about everyone else, right? I'm just like, well, let me get mine first, you know? So I think more recently, I've been taking much more of a proactive approach. And that starts by, you know, like, I'm halfway through Martin Luther King's biography, and I'm reading Malcolm X's biography, right? So it's like, I kind of like dabbled in it, like, I was reading Muhammad Ali's and Arthur Ashe's, right? But it was, I still noticed, like, those chapters, I was kind of just like, ah, oh, not again. You know what I mean? Like, a part of me didn't see it as one, I saw me as different, right? So it was just interesting to see who I was being about it versus, like, who I'm being about it. So, yeah, it's been interesting.
Well, it's so cool that you share that. Like, I've also played into this too, right? Like, I grew up in Oakland, which is diverse, but as I got older, going to high school, going to college, I was in mostly white spaces where I wasn't around people who looked like me. And even as a child, I shared this in our last episode, like, I experienced bullying because of the way that I talked, from people who looked like me, because they thought I was too white. And it was like, I wasn't white enough for the white kids, and I wasn't black enough for the black kids. Where do I go? Like, I don't, you're shaking your head like you've experienced this, or you know it somewhere.
This is bad, like, because I don't speak, like, yeah, I'm pretty American. Like, I've never been to Asia, right? So all the Asians are like, oh, you're a fake Asian, you know, like, you don't even follow the Asians. And then obviously when I hang out with, you know, white people, they're like, you know, they know that I'm Asian, right? So they're like, where are you from? And stuff like that. So yeah, I feel, yeah, like, it's crazy how society.
Cool. Oh, and how interesting, right? It's funny. So I wrote that article you mentioned about Arianna Huffington. I finished that article on Thrive, and I walked out on my door, and I went to take my dog for a walk, and a neighbor that I've lived near literally down the street for 2 years sees me with my dog and goes, hey, are you with a client? And I was like, client? And he was like, oh my God, you're not the dog walker? And I was like, no. So it was this, like, it was like, and trust me, I've been handed this a lot of times. Living in Manhattan, people are surprised that I'm black living in Manhattan, I believe. I think they're surprised I live in the Upper West Side, which is mostly Jewish, in Manhattan. They're surprised I live alone in Manhattan. But, you know, it's like the more you climb these scales socioeconomically, and not to say that I'm rich by any means, but the more, you know, if the average American family makes $60,000 a year, people in tech are mostly making more than that as individuals. And so the higher you go, the less you see of me, and the more assumptions are made that we don't belong, right? So we're doing some sort of service. So I've been asked if I'm the Instacart delivery girl at my grocery store, or, you know, dog walker multiple times. And you know what it actually has been doing is it's calling. I told Jackie this. I'm like, this is calling my empathy and compassion to the table. Because I was angry the first time. And then I was like, you know what? Like Marianne always says, being angry or holding anger is like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. And so I'm like, well, what is this doing for me? Actually, it's doing nothing. And I don't know this guy. He made an assumption. He probably shouldn't have said that, but he did. And I corrected him. And guess what? He may never say it again. And he hasn't. And then next time I saw him, we introduced ourselves. And I said, I'm Leah. I'm your neighbor. Yeah, I live up the street. This is my dog, Piper. And yeah, like, here we are. And you know, the beautiful thing from a psychology perspective is I am showing him something outside of what's familiar to him, so he can no longer make those assumptions in the same way. The more he sees somebody modeling something, the more it becomes normal. So he may never ask that question again, or assume that a black person in the neighborhood is a service person.
Yeah, that's awesome that you're able to get outside of, like, the hate and anger, and then get into a place of, like, okay, like, how do we move forward from here? So they kind of remind me of like Gia, who leads the LinkedIn Marketing Solutions. She was in a boardroom, and it was like one of the biggest deals ever. And, you know, obviously she's a decision maker, but she came to the room early, and then the other executives, the clients, was like, hey, can you get me some Starbucks?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And she was, you know, she was angry, but then, you know, she actually did. Like, she went down and got it. And then...
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And she came back and taught them a lesson that they will never, ever make again, right? So she definitely...
Wow.
Awkward, where everyone, there was like 30 people in the room and like LinkedIn executives as well. And they were just waiting for her to come back with the coffee. And he gave it, and then she gave it to them. And yeah, I was like, wow, like that's a powerful story.
Wow.
Yeah. But
that is really powerful. Well, and the more, you know, representation, it's like kind of, you know, I'm certainly not a D&I expert, but like, here's what we know for sure. Representation matters. The more people see us in spaces, the less they assume that we're serving in some way, or we are junior, or, you know, not the decision maker. Like, how cool is that? But then I kind of love that little like silent revenge story. Hey, guess what? I'm signing your check. Yeah, I went and got your Starbucks, but now you better sell me on this.
She said it was like the most, David said it was the most awkward, like 15 minutes, like ever. Like, just uncomfortable.
Oh, but you know what? That's sometimes how the lessons get learned. Like, you know, when you make assumptions, or they say that you make an ASS out of you and me.
Yeah. Yeah. Reminds me of, I remember like we did a celebratory dinner once at my old company, Experian. And we were going out. It was like a nice, fancy, like dinner with like nice wine and stuff like that. And then I think we were asking the host, like the guy who owned the place. And then they were like, oh, you should like guess what Davidson is. Like, I guess they were just playing the guessing game. And then they gave him a bunch of options. And then I think he chose like, oh, he's the IT guy, like out of the group. And I was just like, oh my God. But it was kind of funny. And then they're like, nah, dude, he's the sales guy. And I was just like, but you know, like to your point, like, it, you know, at first, like, I think the more you represent and the more like representation people see, like people start to change. But, you know, it starts with like, you know, in the beginning, it is uncomfortable. I think that's why I'm more passionate, yeah, a lot more diversity stuff, like being an ERG lead. Like, I feel like I've grown more in the past like 4 months than I did like 5 years, like the past 5 years. Like, you know, you really get to see a lot, like when you become like an ERG lead. And LinkedIn does an amazing job training us as well. Like, it's just like,
yeah,
on all the time. Yeah.
And what I'm proud of is like our, you know, there's so much, there is certainly hate in this world, but there's a lot of love. And I think that a lot of the fear, I think a lot of the hate comes from fear. And so, you know, when you see examples, you know, I hope that most of the country isn't full of these overt and covert examples of racism. My hope is that these are pockets of our country where change is hopefully afoot. And I also believe that a lot of these people who may be feeling this way and are not happy with how the world is shifting, this is about fear. It's about fear of loss of power. It's about a fear of loss of control. It's about a fear of loss of what they maybe believed was their country and that their ancestors taught them. And so when you think about empathy, it's like, well, damn, if I were them and I were in their shoes and I had learned what they learned and grew up the way they grew up, what's the likelihood I'd be just like them? Pretty high. And so the question now becomes like, okay, how likely are they willing to change? And this is where personally, I see the serious value in, you know, change yourself, change the world. You have to do the inward journey. If you don't go on the inward journey, you don't have as much to offer.
Yeah, I do think every interaction is a projection, right? Like 100% of our interactions are projections. Totally. So even sometimes if I'm noticing I'm being like hard on, you know, a partner or, you know, my SD team or whatever it is, right? It's like, okay, like where can I own my part in it? And a lot of times like it's me, right? It's not them. So I'm much more aware of like how I'm being, especially if I'm like automatically judging them or, you know, I'm automatically putting something in the space that might not have been there, right? Prior to me bringing
it. Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah. Like, are you judging or are you putting something in that wasn't there or that doesn't belong there based on your own projection? I noticed for myself, like I've been on this, it's so funny. You said you've learned more in the last 4 months than the last 5 years. I feel the same way. I mean, actually COVID while it is absolutely awful, I will totally underscore that it's terrible. And I know people who've lost people because of it. For me personally, it's been a capacity builder. It's shown me like what I'm made of, and it continues to. And so I too have learned probably more in the last 6 months than I have in the last 5 years. In a lot of ways, it feels like growth just mashed into this 6 months, that almost 7 month craziness that that our lives have become. And one of the things that I found that's really powerful, you know, I found last year and really started to practice last year, self-compassion. And so, you know, you shared the projection, and this is the hard thing. It's hard for me. It's hard for all of us. We're only as kind to others as we are to ourselves. And so, like, you know, when you're spewing a projection at someone, or when you get a projection spewed at you, or someone's mean to you or acts a certain way, just imagine how mean they are to themselves.
That's deep. And it's fascinating when you have like management, you know, own up to like, okay, maybe I haven't been in the best state of mind myself, right? So I think, yeah, it always starts with oneself. And yeah, where do you find that balance of like being like ambitious, right? Having big goals and like striving to improve, and then just being okay with like what's so, you know, like just respecting the process and not rushing it. I feel like I often find myself like, I don't know, it's hard for me to just be, you know?
Yeah, I would say this. I would say the same. I mean, I think I being a type 7 on the Enneagram, because I'm an enthusiast, it also means we're always looking for opportunities. There's always something new. So like, if you called me yesterday, I'm reading 5 books right now, like probably really 7, if we're being honest, right? Like, and I have like a backlog of 15 more. I was looking around last time going, oh my God, there's so many books I still read. So that's how I am. I'm signing up for classes. I'm all, like, if you know, my close friends are like, when are you not doing something? Like, I'm always up to something, and it's so energizing for me. And it's also, it also keeps me from being fully present sometimes. And it used to really make me want to rush every single process until, a couple years ago when I started running. And so I've always been a sprinter, but, after I finished CTI with coaching, I had this moment, and I felt like I said this in my last day of CTI. It was like, I feel like I came home to myself. Like, there was something that aligned that wasn't there before. And I was like, all right, I'm going to start running, because I've always wanted to, and I've always made excuses, and I'm going to commit. And I started running, and then Jackie, you know, said, let's sign up for the marathon. I said, all right, let's do it. So we ran 9 races last year, got into the marathon this year, which was actually canceled today. The New York City Marathon, we knew it was coming. It was canceled for this year, so we'll do it next year. But the beauty of that is actually that I became a very serious runner. And so I run, and I always say this, that we laugh because I'm always like, I'm a runner. But it really is such a part of my identity, that because it's taught me patience, like it's taught me joy, because I love it so much. And I run long distance. I'm running like 5 days a week typically. But it's also just taught me the patience of building endurance over time and seeing a result, not in the moment. My mom used to always say, like, you're always looking for the pill, like the fast pill to like get you what you want tomorrow and snap your fingers. And she's like, that doesn't exist. So you'd always have those conversations, but it's taught me serious patience. And so now I see the value in the slow build versus the quick fix. So I try to balance that. I'm not perfect. I just told you I'm reading 7 books, but I'm trying to balance it.
Other books are you reading?
I am. So I listen to books, first of all. I would totally recommend for anyone listening that has a way to get outside. What I've done is shifted my schedule. So during the day, I walk my dog for an hour and I listen to a book. So I'm listening to Michael Stringer's The Untethered Soul. Really interesting book about consciousness and, obviously, as you can tell, spirituality. I'm also listening to Judgment Detox by Gabby Bernstein, one of my favorite spiritual teachers. It's all around judgment and what that's about. I am reading, so I'm reading a book by Mike Robbins called Nothing Changes Until You Do.
Yeah.
Really cool book. Great guy. Yeah, we've become friends. He's awesome. I am also reading The Alchemist for like the seventh time. So I'm like, where is my bedstand? It's back there. The Alchemist. And I am also reading Seat of the Soul. So I pick that up and like flip through. I'm reading another book by a woman named Maria Berg. She's part of the Kabbalah Center. It's called Rethink Love. So it's a journey of self-development, not necessarily around partnership, but around like how we grow and develop and love ourselves. I think that's the list for right now.
That's awesome.
I'm sure there's something else to listen.
I think the guy who wrote The Alchemist just came out with a new book as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Paulo Coelho, that's cool.
Because he doesn't come up with, you know, it's been a while, but I remember seeing that. Yeah, there's...
So my personality, I'm literally Googling it right now to order on Amazon. So this is how it works. I'm going to stop myself, but that's awesome to know.
The Mike Robbins conversation you had was amazing, actually. Like, he is... Aww. He's really good. Like, I was like blown away. I was like, wow, like a baseball player? Like, all right, you know. But, you know,
he's a powerful guy.
Some stuff, you know. So,
yeah. Yeah, he's a great person for sure.
Yeah, I'm noticing a lot of the common themes is like finding like destiny, like soul searching, like a lot of like just finding like your purpose in the world. It seems like that's like the common thread amongst a lot of the books you're reading.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ikigai actually helped me sort of solidify why I believe this is so important and like why I love coaching is, you know, I've had therapists and I've had coaches and currently I have both. I see the value in both, but I see my spirit, I see myself come alive when I'm being coached. And I think a big part of that is that your coach is pulling you forward into the future, into the what you want. And so you're being magnetized into what you want versus being pulled back into what your past looked like. And both are important. And yet, like, you know, Tony Robbins says the past is only your present if you live there. And so the question is, like, how much time do I really want to live in the past versus be pulled forward? So in Ikigai, they talk about how there were two types of therapy that came around. One was brought forth by Viktor Frankl, who was in one of the death camps in Germany. And he used to have to make every day fun for his son while they're in the death camp. And I think it was 5 years he spent there. After he got out, he talked a lot about purpose and what it meant. And he said he created this style of therapy called logotherapy, which is really based on the idea that we kind of be pulled forward versus explore everything behind us. And so I'm really inspired by that. And I think we get pulled forward by our meaning and our purpose. And I think that's really deep within us. And I also think I personally am inspired by everything we don't see, by like the world that we can't see with our eyes and maybe feel with our hands and hear, but that is truly there. And like, that's what I call the universe. So I think there is something beyond what we just experience on a day-to-day basis that we can tap into.
Yeah. I think, it's interesting because I feel like there's a lot of people that probably practice a lot of like the, I call it laws of attraction type stuff, but they're like afraid to like tell people that they do, right? Just because I think there's, or just kind of like, yeah, you know, prove it to me. But I do think a lot of people actually practice it, but they just don't want to say because they think people might judge them and be like, oh, you're weird, you know?
Yeah, I had, it's funny. My dad is really into this. And so he's sent me books by people who've studied the law of attraction for years. And you know, when The Secret came out, whenever that was, you know, I definitely grabbed the book and was interested. And, I personally believe that it is real, that it is true. I also believe that sometimes we get in our own way when we're trying to attract something because we hold on to what we want and how we think we're going to get it versus holding on to what we want and releasing how it happens. And I think that's where people maybe get a little caught up in saying like manifestation of the law of attraction isn't real because, you know, if I say I want a pink car tomorrow and I don't get it, then it can't be real. Versus we've got to go a lot deeper than that when we talk about manifestation. And, you know, earlier this year, I had gotten off of Instagram. So I went to Tony Robbins' event in 2016 at the end of the year to unleash the power within. And after that, I got off Instagram. I was like, I'm not doing this because all I do on Instagram is compare, compete, wonder why I'm not perfect enough. Why am I not in the Hamptons having a vacation in a gingham swimsuit by the pool? Like, why am I not doing this or that? And I never felt happy. I was like, how often am I really happy when I get off Instagram? And it was basically never. And so I got off of it and I was pretty much off for 3 years until December of last year when I knew what I wanted to do and how I wanted to share. And I decided that what I wanted to share was everything I've been learning around spirituality and psychology. And the scariest part was kind of what you're saying, which is like coming out spiritual is what I've labeled it. But like I had to come out spiritually and that was a process. Like I had a coach that was coaching me through, you know, the things I wanted to share and the fear I had about what people would think of me. So I started a secret Instagram. I was like, I don't really want anybody to find me. Like I'll be public, but I hope it's just people that don't know me. And in the past, I don't know, 3-4 months, people from LinkedIn have slowly been finding me. And it's been really great as I started to integrate more of who I am and care less about what everyone else thinks. If I had started this Instagram in December and invited everybody I knew to my Instagram, I just wouldn't have been ready. But this is part of the integration, meaning, and purpose process. It's like I'm here to share my spiritual experiences, my path, my journey. It's my passion. It's my purpose. And for me to not do it would be totally misaligned. Mm-hmm. So now it feels great because I'm like, great, come on down, find me. If you like what I'm saying, fantastic. If you don't, unfollow me. Either way, I believe my message will hit the people that need to hear it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think Oprah's Super Soul Sundays is like what got me into a lot more of this stuff.
Oh,
she's amazing. Oprah is just like, she's just so funny and relatable and she's so real. And, you know, and she really is just able to be with like anything, you know, she's.
Yeah.
Well,
what was your favorite? Can you think of like a favorite one that you've listened to?
I remember she talked about one where it talks about how like we're reborn and that we all have like a different stages and she's at like.
The level.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that one. Yeah.
She was like, in the last stage where you're like the wisest, where like that's like the most impact, like, and that definitely like resonated with me because I'm just like, huh, yeah, I could see that. I just love her stories. Like I remember there's like just really inspirational people that, I mean, there was a lady that I remember swam like the whole, I forgot what canal it was, but she was like in her 60s and it was like ridiculous. I'm like, wow, like what, you know? So yeah, I like her. And then I like her master class where she, like, I think LL Cool J was like a really cool one. Yeah. I just like everything that she puts out. Like, I feel like it's all good.
Yeah, she kind of opened me up to, or not her, but that was my like first path really into spirituality was like after being raised Christian, but then kind of leaving it, I was experiencing really bad anxiety when I moved back to New York in 2018. And I couldn't figure out what it was because I had, you know, moved back to New York. I was where I wanted to be. I was in a good job. I was feeling less stressed, but like, why was my anxiety so high? And so one night I was in my apartment and I literally had such bad stress. I was like, I don't know what to do. And I literally fell to my knees and like prayed. And I hadn't prayed in, I can't tell you how long. Still knew how to do it. but I prayed and I was like, help me. Like, I don't know what to do. And so I went out to walk my dog that night and I had a gut feeling that I should look at podcasts. And I'd never listened to any. I think I'd followed Oprah's like a year ago, but never listened. And that day was the day that Marianne Williamson had released Oprah had released Marianne Williamson's A Return to Love 20-year anniversary. And that changed my life. Like I'd never heard of her. I'd never heard what she taught. And then I listened to that and I was like, oh my God, this is the truth. I'm either coming from fear or I'm coming from love. And the question is, you know, how can I experience what she calls, or what A Course in Miracle calls, a miracle, which is a perception shift from fear to love. And that, that changed me. And then I, like you, it sounds like we probably could compare notes. I've listened to every episode since then for the last 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. She, I feel like she's a good like medium, right? Cause like, I feel like when she's reached a certain level of success where people are like, okay, like, let me see what she's doing. Right.
Cause I think listen to this. Yeah.
People that you're like, I've never heard of this person. I've noted what, you know, and then, so I think when someone has the business success, like it's a little bit more like, okay, like I'll listen, I'll be more open to what she says. Yeah.
Well, here's the question. How do we make it such that in modern spirituality, which I'm now coining it, we buy into it despite material success, right? Like what are we holding up as good enough to talk about something, right? And that's like, not for you specifically, but for all of us. Like, you know, if it's not an Oprah, thank God she has her platform and she's using it, but how might we buy into things people are saying that we would typically say are not logical, and believing that like part of life is totally illogical. That's why we have science, because we have yet to discover so much of what is really happening on this planet and in the universe.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I think people are starting to be more open to it. Like, meditation's becoming way more acceptable. I think companies like Headspace are reaching the masses via like corporate wellness programs. Like, I'm starting to see a shift, because I used to be like, I remember I did transcendental meditation, and I was like afraid to tell people that I do, you know, TM. But I feel like, you know, I LinkedIn, it's like, it's acceptable. It's definitely, but yeah, I remember like bringing meditation to my old companies, and it was just like, it was a much harder sell, right? Like people are like, well, what, show me the facts, you know, like, or who
is that stuff? Yeah. Well, give me the data.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question though. Huh.
Well, I agree with you. I think LinkedIn is really, we're so lucky to work here, because if we are fairly open. I mean, Twila, our new head of chief people officer, just let us in a breathing exercise on our all hands. I mean, if that's not like a nod to, you know, modern spirituality, as I'll continue to call it, I don't know what is. And that's pretty cool that she could do that. And we did it. And I love box breathing. I felt calmer. I don't know about you, but
yeah,
I'm happy to see that.
Yeah, that blew my mind. I was just like, wow, this is happening. This is so cool.
For maybe tens of thousands of people, this is happening. So it's you know what, Davidson, too, I realize, like, when I am afraid, I think there's a quote Marie Forleo had, and I'm going to butcher it, but she's one of my favorite coaches. And it's kind of like, when you don't share your gift, you are robbing people of it. And it was just such a different way for me to look at my own fears around coming out spiritual. I was like, oh, right, I'm robbing people of a message, because like, just like you, you and I are two different people that will be heard two different ways. And some people will relate to you and some will relate to me. But if I am so afraid I won't share, then I'm robbing them of it. And so it's like, that is what pulls me forward in my coming out spiritual and my, you know, looking at modern spirituality and trying to bring it more into the workplace and just into life and integrate it, is like, don't rob people of the power that we've accessed.
That's a good point. Maybe I think that's probably why I feel like I've been more in my element, because I'm sharing like the Asian American experience, like what it's like being Asian in sales. Or so I think that's probably why I feel much more grounded and more connected, because it's from an authentic place, and I feel like it's a voice that's not heard very, very often. And I feel like, yeah, it's resonating. Like a lot of people are like reaching out to me, and then it's, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's like maybe there was a conversation I was having with a woman who, she's her name's Michelle Tenzik. She has a cool background, and she and I did a talk about a month and a half ago, maybe. And someone in the chat of the talk asked about imposter syndrome, and it made me realize, oftentimes, like, you know, that saying, it's lonely at the top. Just the feeling that sometimes when not even at the top, but just it's lonely in new spaces sometimes, right? Like the most interesting and entrepreneurial people are the ones that everyone says they're weird until they jump on the bandwagon with them, right? But there's that period of time where you're just the weirdo and people are like, what is this person doing? Like, what are they talking about? So it's lonely on the sides, or it's lonely certain places. And I think, instead of feeling like you're the imposter, you can be the model. It's like the more we integrate, the more we become the model. And so something for me that's happened in the last month is just I've gotten to integrate more of my experience as a Black American woman than I've probably ever really gotten to, because I've finally gotten to talk about it in public with my coworkers in a space where it was, not that it wasn't allowed to be discussed, but that it wasn't comfortable. And so you avoid the uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's true. And that's awesome that it's happening now. And I mean, it's cool that you have this platform where you can reach so many people too, So Ja and I were thinking about even starting our own like ERG podcast, right? So we've been getting, we're doing a pilot coming up soon. So that should be interesting.
Cool. But
yeah, I think it's, like you said, now is the time, right? I think people are starting to realize we need to kind of evaluate, and kind of reinvent ourselves, like as our identity as like Americans, as society, obviously Mother Earth is kind of like, kind of rebelling, like, dude, like slow down.
Yeah.
So it's, this year is the year, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree too. And I think what I'm loving, and what I'm excited to see is, more and more white allies stepping up and also just being able to talk about being white. Like white is a race, but I have felt that in the past year, 10 years I've been in corporate, we never talked about being white. So we did talk about being Black or Asian or Middle Eastern, because it was assumed that to be white, because it was the majority, was to be normal or to just be a person, And so you probably got this from white fragility also, but the conversation of, many white people could just say, well, I'm unique, or I'm just myself, or I'm just a human. But for us, it's like, oh, well, you're this type of human. So I think there's this really cool integration that's going to happen with all of us identifying that, and particularly for white allies and for white people in general, that it is a race. It is a thing. And all of this structure we've created is totally made up. So how do we make up a new one since it's not working?
I feel like that book is so perfect, right? Because you're right. There's not a lot of people. There's no one really writing about the white identity, really, right? It's sort of just like the status quo, right? And then they always say, like, history is written by the victors, right? So, it's like the history books, like everything is, it's very biased, right? Like, you don't really get like a different perspective. So, yeah, I think like a lot of celebrities I know are using their platforms now to actually talk about white privilege and what that means.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. Like, I would never think this. I've been mind blown. I'm like, whoa, okay. Like, even like Warren Buffett and it's just people that have the voice, or people that have so much influence. Like, they are. So it's interesting to see people speaking up that I never think would,
Yeah. So you're showing up to the party. Like, all of us are. I have this quote over here that one of my friends, Mike Romoff, said, stop signing up or stop signing the contract of societal rules. But we've all signed a contract of the rules of society, both spoken and unspoken. And I think we all need to show up and talk about the contracts we've gotten to sign or had to sign in some instances. And then also, how do we transcend those contracts? So, like, I was sharing about my dad, and my own personal belief is that we can transcend those contracts. That even with systems in place, things are difficult, maybe more difficult for some than others, maybe not. That we have a lot more authentic power as human beings than we even believe we have. So when we don't sign up for the contract and, we find a closed door, we go to the window and open it. Like, how can we do that too? How can oppressed people also do that? How can everybody show up to the party ready to refresh, renew, and be better tomorrow?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's awesome. It's very clear that there's a lot changing in the world, and we're each playing our part. You're playing your part, I'm playing my part, and it's awesome to see people step up to the plate, right? People that, you know, I think a lot of people are just comfortable. Like, people want to be comfortable. They don't want to stir the pot too much. They just kind of want to stay low key. But I'm seeing that people are much more open now, and you know, we still have a long way to go, but I'm definitely noticing a shift. So
yeah.
Well, this was an amazing conversation, Leah.
It was great.
I'm so glad to have you on the podcast. And yeah, I'm excited to see what you continue to create. And I'm glad that you came out spiritually. That resonates with me. I don't think I'm like necessarily there yet. Like, I think sometimes. But yeah, I think that's a good call to action as well. Like, just to be more open about it, you know?
Yeah, it's moment by moment. It's just whatever the next step is. It's definitely got to be authentic. And yeah. Thank you for having me. I think it all even you having me talk about some of this is helping me continue to come out spiritually, because it's important. And I think it happens in the moments, right? So you'll do it when you do it, and whatever it means to you.
Yeah,
it means something different for all of us.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. And yeah, enjoy the rest of your week.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. And thanks for hosting this podcast. I think it's great what you're doing.
Thank you.
Well, that's it, folks. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe and let me know what your thoughts are. If there were any takeaways, I welcome all positive and constructive feedback, and hope you enjoy. Stay tuned for more interesting stories and guests. Take care.